Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this increasingly rare episode of Talking the Blues. George and Andy, how are you both?
I'm personally stuffed with some German cake that Jules found in the supermarket. So,
Stalin.
Stollen, yeah, it's really nice. Wow. I was well impressed. So, I'm good, Paul. How are you?
Yeah, all things considered, as well as I can be. So, without going into any of the details, just, I think we probably owe an explanation to people who listen to the podcast, for a number of reasons, mainly sort of health and logistics related. We've not been able to podcast in the last couple of weeks, so apologies for that. But we're back now, and we will be podcasting over the Christmas period. So we look forward to it. Quite a bit to catch up on. Not sure I'm the best person to be catching up on with, but I'll throw my tuppence in, and it's over to George and Andy, really.
Well, it's not because I didn't see the Chelsea match, so let's start there. Did you see the Chelsea match, Paul?
Afraid not, no.
There you
All right, so that's down. I'm taking center stage on
This
the
could be,
Chelsea game, am I?
yeah, we could achieve a new first for Talking the Blues. We could actually talk about a game that none of us saw.
Well, the
Well,
interesting point is that since the match, none of us seems to have watched the highlights to be able to contribute.
I did watch the Chelsea game,
Go on.
and to say the least, I was disappointed. I mean, prior to the game, you told me your opinion on Chelsea, bro, and I have to say, having watched our game against them, and then having watched them against Newcastle on Saturday, I'm in total agreement. They're a shower. They've got some immensely talented footballers
That's the
who
pity.
when they put their mind to it, they can play. But the dark arts and time wasting and feigning of injury and whining at the referees and whining at the linesman just gets up my nose. That Cucurella, somebody needs to give him a big stiff right hook. They really do. He's the one at the minute who I if I was on a football field with him, I would be red carded for snotting him. He gets right up my nose. And in the game again, and to show it's not just bias because we lost at Stamford Bridge. I deliberately watched their game at Newcastle on Saturday. And in the first minute, I kid you not, in the first minute, off the ball, he kicked Bruno Guimarães, however you say his name.
Right. He wrote with them.
The Newcastle Iroben. He kicked him off the ball, and Bruno G, let's call him, went down writhing, screaming. The referee didn't see it. The linesman didn't see it. So he wasn't going to get anything. So he immediately jumps up and runs straight back into the game. And I'm thinking, Cass, we've not even got 45 seconds into this game. We've had an off-the-ball kick by a snide. And then we've had a feigning injury screaming like I've been shot. Oh, dear, nothing. I'm not going to get anything. So let's get up and get on with it. And I thought, is this the way this game is going to go? And that's exactly how the game went. There was, I think I said it to you when we spoke on Saturday, in between the time wasting, the snide, the gobbing off at the referee, and the pinching yards at throw-ins and all the dark arts. In between all that, there was some good football played, and Newcastle thoroughly deserved to be 2-0 up at half time, and could well have been 3-0 up. And if they had have been, Chelsea wouldn't have had a leg to stand on. But I just thought to myself, at half-time, I thought, they're going to get back in this because they'll have to put their minds to playing football instead of sniding. And they did put their minds to it, and they did score two goals, and they did get a point. And in the end, they looked the more likely to decide to get a third goal. But, you know, I'm talking the Blues, and we're talking the frigging Magpies here, but watching that game was as a result of watching our game against Chelsea and seeing all this going on and thinking, oh, hang on a minute, I've obviously got, you know, Everton blue tinted glasses on, and I see all the snide against us. That's why I watched the game against Newcastle, because I had no interest in that game whatsoever, really, other than to see how much of it went on in a game that I wasn't really interested in. And it's there every game. And it's nonsense. It's just ruining the game of football. And our game at Stamford Bridge, we started quite brightly. We started quite well. And unfortunately, I'm going to go glass half empty here. Sorry about that. It's Christmas and all that, and I should be glass half full. But I'm glass half empty because we did well for 15 minutes or so, and then it was archetypal Everton. Like, we're in this game, we're doing okay, so we can just relax and ease up a bit and wallop. Chelsea hit us with their first attack and scored. And straight, you know, after what, 20 minutes, I think it was, when Cole Palmer scored. I think it was Palmer who scored the first, I can't remember now, but
it
literally was their first attack. And we're behind the eight ball, knowing full well that we haven't got the tools or enough of the tools to fight back against a team that can play when they want to. And it wasn't really until the last 10 minutes or so that we actually laid a glove on them. And then I think it was Ndiaye at the post late on. And there was another couple of half chances. But overall, it was disappointing because obviously by that time we were 2-0 down.
Right.
I'm not even going to gripe about Everton here. We know, and Paul said this for weeks, and he's right, and other people have said it as well, and they're right, that we are miles ahead of where we were this time last year, than this time last year, the year before that, and this time the year before that, when we've been bottom three and struggling and staring over the shoulder at the precipice of relegation. You know, we're comfortably mid-table at the moment. We're going into Christmas in 10th. We haven't been in the top half of the table since Ancelotti was here. So we should be pleased. We should be grateful. We should be thankful. We should be glass half full. But then we played Arsenal on the other evening, and we never laid a glove on them either. We never laid a glove on them. Their goalie had the easiest night of football he's ever going to have. Didn't have a thing to do. Now you could say, well, they didn't score other than from the penalty, which was an absolutely ridiculous handball from Jake O'Brien. What on earth went through his head to do that? I have no idea. I would love to have heard the conversation between him and Mr. Moyes at half-time, or maybe Moyes left it till the final whistle so as not to get right really into the lad's head for the second half. But what on earth went through Jake O'Brien's head, I have no idea. Not a Scooby-Doo. But other than that, you know, I mean, I think they hit the woodwork twice. Trossard hit the post when he really should have scored. But we didn't lay a finger on him. Now, again, you can say, well, hang on a minute, we're nothing like the side that Arsenal have got. And look at the strength they had on the bench as well. You know, and Moyes kind of said, you know, well, we gave him again. The only difference was the penalty. Well, I don't think we did give him a game, because I think Arteta knew that the moment they scored, be it on however it came and whenever it came, that there was precious little chance that Everton would bounce back. So I should be glass half full, because we're in 10th and we've got three potentially winnable games coming up against Burnley, Forest and Wolves. I'll say right here and now that if we don't take at least 7 points from that, I am going to be fed up and I will be glass half empty. But hopefully the boys will go out and take not 7 but 9 points from those three games, and then I'll be glass half full again. And if that's me flip-flopping over my glasses, well, that's just the way it's going to be, folks. I'm terribly sorry about that. But I want some consistency. And I didn't see, you know, from the games we had before going up against Chelsea and Arsenal, and people will rightly say that, look, these are two of the strongest squads in the Premier League, and we haven't got a squad as strong, and we haven't got the depth of the squads that neither Chelsea or Arsenal have got. And I wholeheartedly accept that. But I think we had a decent start at Stamford Bridge, and we didn't push it home. And like I said, it just struck me as down the years, and I'm going back many, many, many years, where we've gone to away games and we've started well, and we've got 15 minutes into the game, and then we've just eased up and wallop, we've been hit by a sucker punch. And that's what, to me, that's what happened at Stamford Bridge. We gave them one attack and they took advantage. And that's the difference, I guess, in the Premier League to any other league, is when you get that chance, you've got to put it away. You've got to be clinical. And sadly, at this moment in time, we are far from clinical.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Andy, I think all that you've said is very fair. The difference, of course, is that when we get the chances, we don't convert them. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we don't get as many chances as other teams because, you know, for a whole range of factors. But, you know, I support everything that you said. I've been thinking about this a lot, about how do you actually, given the resources, the player resources that we've got currently, how do you actually change things? Is there a change in approach, perhaps? Because there is a bit of a pattern that's developing here. We you know, we start the game reasonably comfortably. We look a much better team than we've looked for a long time, more compact, a little bit of flair in terms of Ndai and in terms of Grealish from time to time. When Dewsbury Hall's playing, you know, we look at a different side again. I don't think we're quite as strong defensively as we could be, but then, you know, you can point to injuries, you can point to the fact that for almost any other Premier League team, our current fullbacks would not be the first choice fullbacks in many teams in the Premier League. So there's a whole load of reasons for us being in this position.
Well, we're currently only playing one fullback, which is Mikalenko.
Yes.
Because O'Brien isn't a fullback and he's filling in because...
And his game is suffering from it.
Yeah, his game is probably suffering from it, and quite why... If we've got, you know, we've got two right backs in Coleman and Patterson, and if they're not fit, then the only other option is to move Garner around. But then that means either you drop O'Brien or you move him into his role. But then who makes way for him? To me, the thing that needs to change, and I don't know how to go about this, is the mentality. Because even though we're playing better football this season than we have for 2 or 3 years, let's be generous about it. There's still that. I still get that feeling that not only the fans, but or some of the fans, maybe most of the fans, but I think some of the players as well, kind of sink when if we fall behind. Well, to me, the antidote to that is get on the front foot and get in front. Take the game to the opposition. Stop. And Arsenal are a far stronger side than we are, far stronger squad. Chelsea, far stronger squad. Some marvellous footballers. Not taking it away from them. They're tremendous footballers. It's just that they're full of snide as well.
Yeah.
But if we can't, if we're going into games with it in the back of our minds that if we fall behind, then it's becomes double hard, then surely we have to try and take the upper hand and to some degree throw caution to the wind. We've got to win games. We can't, it's no good. We lose 1-0 to Arsenal and some people think, that's okay. No, it's a loss. It's a loss. We lost. Doesn't matter whether it's 1-0 or 5-0. We lost. We didn't get anything from the game at all. Zilch. So
we've won as many games as we've lost though this season. I mean, our record is 7-3-7, isn't it? So
learn something from the games that we've won and take the game. All right, let's look at the game at Old Trafford. We went there and played. We went to Old Trafford and played. To my mind, as though, and that was the game I didn't see. Obviously, I was unavailable. I was detained elsewhere that night. But from what I saw on the highlight package, and you guys can correct me because I think you did see it in the full 90 minutes, was that Everton went to Old Trafford not fearing United, thinking this rabble are as disorganised almost as, well, they're more disorganised than we are. And I'm not saying we're disorganised. I'm just saying that that's possibly how the players were thinking, despite the fact that we've got issues, this mob in red in front of us have got way more issues, so let's take advantage of it. And the team went there, and from what I saw, we played confidently, despite losing Seamus after 20 seconds, and then Garner Gay slapping Michael Keane and getting himself sent off. They just rolled the sleeves up and went, we're still better than this lot. There's still nothing to fear. Let's go and win it. And they did go and win it. And that's all I'm saying is, let's take that. Oh, Christ, we're going up against Arsenal. Take that out of the equation straight away. Get at him.
I think this is the key point, isn't it? Whether or not Moyes should abandon his natural caution and say, let's go for it, or do what he's doing. And maybe in doing what he's doing, it might work. Well, on the evidence of the season so far, it works in slightly less than half of the games. The question is whether the results would be better if we adopted a more positive approach from the beginning of the game.
Well, let me put it up right. Let's look forward now then to the next three games, because we've just played the top of the league and we've played the side, I think Chelsea are fourth or fifth, I don't know. What's the table now? Arsenal, City, Villa. Are Chelsea fourth? And then
yeah, Chelsea are fourth, yeah.
Chelsea fourth, right. So we've played 1-4 in the last two games. We've gone 0-6 points. Right, but coming up now, we've got Burnley, who have just got their first point in 8 games at weekend with a last-minute equaliser at Bournemouth, I think it was. Then we've got Forest, who've had a bit of a resurgence under Dyche, but we put them to the sword the other week. So we shouldn't have too much to fear there. And then we've got Wolves, who couldn't hit a barn door from the inside at the moment. And that's at Hill Dickinson.
So we all know that due a result at some point.
That's exactly the thing. That's exactly the thinking that we don't need.
No, I know. I said no, that firmly, tongue in cheek.
But Paul, you're Moyes' biggest advocate, and you've just said exactly what everyone else is thinking. They're due a result. That's not the only result Wolves should be expecting from the Hill Dickinson in 10 days' time, whenever it is. It's a damn good hiding.
Yeah.
I want Everton to go to Turf Moor full of piss and vinegar and put them to the sword. Then we've got to go to the City Ground. I'll give that one. That might be the game where we have to settle for a point. But Turf Moor against a side that's only picked up 1 point out of the last 27, and then Wolves, who've only scored 2 points all season, there's absolutely no excuse for not, to my mind, there'll be no excuse for not taking 6 points from those two, and I'll take a point at Forest. Seven out of the next nine, to me, is non-negotiable. And the whole setup should be positivity. Get out of Turf Moor and hit them hard. Go hell for leather and get the job done. No sitting back, taking it easy.
Well, here's the reason, perhaps, why they won't sit back and take it easy. Look at the amount of goals that the next three teams have scored so far this season. Burnley scored 19 goals, Nottingham Forest 17 goals, and Wolves 9 goals. So they don't really represent any more of a threat at an attacking threat than we do. So there's actually no reason for us to sit back. You can argue that Arsenal have scored 31 goals so far this season. Chelsea scored 29 goals this season. Therefore, there may be a justification in a more cautious approach against those two teams. I think you and I are uncommonly agreeing here that there is no reason to sit back, because the three teams that we play next have as equally difficult a time scoring as we do.
I would put it even blunter than that. They're below us.
We've just had
two losses against teams in 1 and 4. We're now playing teams in, and you're probably looking at a league table, I'm not, but we're looking at teams 20 with Wolves. Burnley can't be any more than 16, probably 17 or 18.
2019 and 17.
2019 and 17, and we're 10th.
Yeah, so
on those grounds alone, we've got to be looking for an absolute minimum of 7 points.
Yeah, I would say 7 points and hopefully 9 points.
Hopefully nine, and what's more, 3 clean sheets. I'm going to be, JP's due a clean sheet, so 3-0 at Turf Moor, 1-0 at City Ground, and then spank Wolves.
Okay, so let's assume that we've got 7 points in the next three games. After 20 games, we'd be on 31 points. Call it roughly a point and a half a game. Mm-hmm. Over the season, that is what? 38 plus 19?
57.
So sort of eighth, ninth, maybe slightly higher, probably no higher than eighth at the end of the season if we continued on that basis.
And if we finished in eighth, Paul, I would hold my hands up and say that would be a terrific result for Everton, for David Moyes and the players, given where we've been the previous three seasons, where we've been looking over our shoulder practically the whole time. It would be a tremendous tremendous improvement. No old bad, no equivocation on that. It would be a tremendous result to finish in eighth. And I reckon, this is only me thinking, I reckon that that's the target that Moyes has set himself, eighth.
Yeah. George, are you still with us?
I am, Dan, and I'm waiting to be invited to speak.
Well, we're not invited yet.
I can tell that.
It's never stopped you before, George.
No. So I'm happy to listen. You know, I mean, I was going to start by saying that the reverse sweep should be banned from English cricket.
Well, yeah, maybe we'll get onto that in a few minutes.
Well, that's the serious issue, Paul. In terms of what you're talking about, the pair of you, you have to explain to me what on earth is the thinking behind picking Dwight McNeil when you could pick Dibbling. And what you said was, you know, the mentality of the coach is that this is the best way to do it. Well, that's what we pay him his wages for. So for me, I'm kind of in Andy's camp. That's a white flag. We're not going to win this. So, you know, I'm not even going to try and experiment with other people. I found that depressing watching the Arsenal game. And, you know, Ndiaye's gone and I'm waiting for this boy to come in. And what comes in is somebody who, with respect to him, is no longer a Premiership football player. But he gets an hour and a bit against the top team in the league, and we get beat. I wonder what's been learnt from that experience.
Nothing.
I didn't learn anything. Maybe somebody else did.
Then it gets back to the point that we often talk about, doesn't it? That maybe Moyes doesn't feel as if he's got the safety factor, the comfort factor to experiment. That maybe the experiment, I don't know, obviously, because I've not spoken to David Moyes about it, but maybe the experimentation comes later in the season. So, we're on
with respect, Paul, in the absence of Illiman and Day going to Turf Moor, and what we just said, 17, 19, and 20. And the next three games. The opposition are currently 17, 19 and 20, yeah? Or 19, 17, whatever. Surely, he has to. He's got to give Dibbling a chance against those three. If not in all three games, certainly in one of those games, Dibbling has to start and he has to be given his head. And he has to be encouraged to go and do what we think he can do for us. Otherwise, why did we write the cheque to bring him here? You know,
because he's not just here for this season, is he? He was a long term target. It made sense for us to buy him, because if we didn't buy him, one of the clubs that we need to compete with, that we're going to compete with, would have bought him. And therefore, we would have been playing against him. I said a few weeks ago, maybe a couple of months ago now, that he's found it difficult to settle. And that's becoming, you know, I think more people are now saying that. You could argue about whether the club is doing enough to assist him on that. I think we have to assume that they are. But if they're not, then obviously that needs to change. But he doesn't look like as if he's anywhere near ready playing in the Premier League at this moment in time. And David Moyes will turn around and say, look, if you go back to Dwight McNeil for a second, because that's the option. He's had a terrible season so far this season. You know, 8 games, no goals, no assists. But if you look at the last season, 4 goals, 6 assists.
Right.
I accept entirely on the evidence of the way Dwight McNeil is playing at this moment in time that he doesn't look like he's going to get anywhere near the performance levels that he achieved in 24, 25. accept that totally. But Moyes might be saying, well, you know, and Moyes, don't forget, Moyes always stresses about what players look like during the week when they're training. It might be the case that McNeil is streets ahead of Dibbling. When we're training during the week, I don't know. I mean, it'd be wonderful if somebody came out and told us, but nobody is going to do that. So we just have to chat about it.
All that's all absolutely true, yeah. We just don't know. But from the evidence of what you're watching, you go, how on earth is he bringing him out for the second half?
Well, yeah. I mean, for him to be on the team sheet for the first kickoff was it wasn't a surprise, but it was disappointing.
But then you could argue
when he emerged from the tunnel, when there was no changes at half time, and you think to yourself, oh my God, what can't he see it? The lad had done nothing. I don't think he'd even been mentioned in the commentary in the first half. Oh, sorry, he had, when he made the right town halls of the corner he took.
I'm not defending McNeil, but I suppose
no,
I am.
No, but don't get me wrong, Paul. What I'm saying is that the manager, it doesn't see what we see. I just think he's been possibly too loyal to Dwight McNeil in this instance. McNeil himself must have known. He must have left the field at half time thinking, he's going to pull me off here. I've done nothing. You know, I made a mess of the one corner we had. And I've not been in the game. I've barely touched the ball. I'm not doing anything. He wouldn't have been surprised if Moyes had said, Dwight, you know, good effort, pal, but I'm putting Tyler on for the second half. You know, you get changed. Get yourself a nice warm shower.
Except it might be the case that in ordinary circumstances, if we had a bigger squad and we had more options, Dibbling might be nowhere near the first team squad.
Well, he's not really, is he?
Because on the evidence of... Yeah, exactly, George. On the evidence of how he's played to date, yes, he's got bags of potential. We know that. And he played really well for Southampton. But he's not yet been able to produce that form for us. Now, there's two arguments.
He's not getting any time, though, is he?
I know. That's what I'm just going to say. There's two arguments to this. Well, if he's not on the pitch, how can he show it? Well, as I said a couple of minutes ago, with Moyes, often it's a question of showing it during the week in training, and then you get your chance on the pitch. If Moyes is not seeing that, and I don't think Moyes is going to change this approach, given it served him, you know, pretty well for over 700 Premier League games. If he's not seeing it during the week, he ain't going to chance it over weekend or, you know, whenever the game is. That's just the reality. And then the question is, well, okay, so who else have we got left? Again, with a bigger squad, more depth in the squad, more versatility in the squad. He might well say, I wouldn't have McNeil in the team. But
it's pretty clear right now that as soon as Dewsbury Hall is fit, then McNeil goes back on the bench.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no way Dwight McNeil can start ahead of Kieran Dewsbury Hall on current form.
No, and he won't. I mean, we know that. But the point being, at the moment, the choice is, you know, it appears to be Dibbling or McNeil. Well, I think Moyes is going to turn around and say, you know what, I know Dwight's had a terrible season to date, but he did a bit last season. I'm going to stick with what I know.
You're absolutely right, Paul. That's a perfect analysis. Personally, disappointed. When you're playing Arsenal, and I thought, Andy, you know, the pair of you identified that, mentality correctly, we've not got much chance here. They are good. If they, thank God they haven't put the bench out there, thrashers, blah, 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 blah. Then why not risk something for crying out loud?
Do you think we start with that we haven't got much of a chance here type attitude? Or do you think we start with an attitude that says we can at least get a draw out of this?
I think if you'd said, do you want a draw? We would have all taken it. Of course we would. But that's not how it works. And, you know, the other thing that the Arsenal match showed us and showed them as it happened, but that's neither here nor there, is that we lack a skipper on the pitch.
Yeah.
We did play well for the first 10 minutes. You say, well, look, there you go. But it doesn't stay there. And you kind of think, you know, the only person I can think of in the league at the moment is that guy that Sunderland bought from Arsenal, Xhaka.
Who I don't
particularly care for, but he is a bit of a, you know, force to be playing with. And we lack one of them in big spades. So the thing that Andy was saying about the possibility of the mentality, and then, you know, there's a town halls and they score. And I think he's right. Arteta did know, yeah, that'll do it. That's fair enough. And Everton didn't have a shot on target all game, so that proves that. And they, you know, hit the post twice, so it should have been 3-0, which would have been a much fairer reflection of what we watched. And Everton did well, considering, you know, the injuries and who's not there and all that baloney. And, you know, if, as I agree with both of you, if we get to 8th, 9th, 10th, you're going to have to go, well done. Given the resources you've had all season, well done. That's some sort of achievement. Along the way, I would like to see a little more courage. That if you're playing a game where you think, I'll take a draw, then for crying out loud, go for it. Picking Dwight McNeil is not going for it. It's not going for anything at all, I'm afraid. And the idea that, you know, well, you know, what can I say? Not Moyes is, you know, a professional player and he manager, and he won't pick Patterson. If he was the last man standing, he wouldn't pick him. So, you know, I kind of hope for that boy's career that he's out of Everton in January. But it means that the team is unbalanced. It's not a natural right back. But right back, and I think it's a waste of O'Brien, who should be in the centre.
But he's not really. Even if we had a bona fide, 100% fit right back, O'Brien's not going to play unless Keane or Tarkow get injured.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that either. And if everybody was fit, I'd start O'Brien and Branthwaite.
Yeah, but everybody isn't fit.
Oh no, nobody. You know, of course not.
And right at this minute, there's no way. I don't. If we had a right back available to us right now, I don't think Jake O'Brien would be first. I don't think he'd be straight into the back four ahead of Tarkow or Keane on current performances. I'm not saying he shouldn't be there for the long term. Obviously, for the long term, Him and Branthwaite would appear to be the golden ticket, for want of a better phrase, as a central defensive pairing. You know, as Keane and Tarkow age, should we say, then Branthwaite and Jake O'Brien are the next thing to come in. I don't think there's any argument about that. Only time will tell, obviously. But right now, we need to solve the right back position, because we can't. It's not fair on O'Brien, really. He knows he's a centre half, and he's doing his best for the club in a position that isn't natural to him. But the right back position has got to be resolved one way or the other. If it's not going to be Patterson, then, as you said, Arkin, you know, let the boy go. Let him go, either go back to Scotland or let him, you know, probably have to drop down to the Championship, whatever. But he's just shining the pine and wasting, you know, it's just a waste of money on the books if Moyes is not going to play him at all. And if Seamus isn't fit, then we've got to go into the transfer market unless there is somebody in the under-21s that we're not aware of who can come in. And I'm not aware of that. I've not been paying, to be honest, I've not been paying that much attention to the 21s for one reason or another. But that to me, that's, you know, obviously the shortage of goals from our strike force and the right-back position are the critical areas at this minute in time for me with the squad.
Did you watch the Arsenal game, Paul?
Yes, it was on, but again, without going into the details, it was difficult for me to watch it all and to focus on it all, to be honest. Right. So probably on the balance, I'd probably say no, I would go with a no, even though it was on.
Right.
But you know the reasons why. I'm not going to go into the reasons why. I couldn't do it. Can we move the conversation on? Because a couple of things. I think it's been a very fair analysis of where we are and different views expressed, which is good. It's just over a year now, December the 19th, 2024, when the Freakins took over Everton. Mm-hmm. So we're 12 months in. I'm sorry, I should have probably asked you this to think about it before. Do you have a view as to how the first year's gone?
The feeling you have, because there's no information. I couldn't, you know, if you threw up six photographs and which one damn Freakin, I wouldn't know. And I wouldn't know, you know, I don't think I'd even recognise the CEO. So the communication has been poor. But the feeling you have, and maybe that's to do with the stadium and the fact that the stadium seems to be getting less and less criticism and seems to be working better and better, and the fact that, you know, they trust Moyes and Moyes is delivering with the resources he's got, it feels miles better, whether it is or not on the ground or in the offices, I have no idea. And, you know, if they were looking for a note, you'd go talk to us for crying out loud.
I think the biggest difference I've noticed is certainly in recent weeks is the club appears to be much more open to engaging with the fan base.
All right.
I mean, obviously, there's the stuff that the likes of the 1878s do with all the flags and banners and what have you, and that enormous one they had on the south stand just before kickoff. On Saturday against Arsenal. But the fact that the club appear to be much more open, certainly than under the North Korean days of Kim Jong-un, with access to players for fan media, I've noticed there's been, on social media, there's been considerably more activity with various groups and what have you, having access to players for interviews and this, that and the other. So that's, I think that's a good thing, if you like, a loosening of the shackles on who can and can't have access to players on what have you. I think that's a good thing. With regards to communication from the Friedkins themselves or from Dan Friedkins himself, no, there's been nothing. Nothing that I'm aware of anyway. And I think, I think we probably could do with their 1 year assessment of where they've got to rather than our 1 year assessment of where they're at. Let's hear it from them. You know, what do they think they've done really, really well? And what do they think that they've still got room for improvement upon? I mean, the fans want room for improvement in transfer business and squad strengthening, etc., etc. But, you know, what else? You know, what else do they feel they've got? They need to do to take Everton to the next level, and then the next level after that, and then the next level after that. We've moved up a level because this time last year and for the last 3 years, we've been hovering around the bottom three, staring at relegation. Now we are, well, we appear to be comfortably mid-table. So we've moved up a level. So the next level has to be knocking on the door of European competition. So that means, I mean, if we said before, eighth would be a tremendous improvement on the last three years. So the next level after finishing, say, 10 to positions 10 to 8 is the level we're at now. So the level after that is knocking on the door of Europe. So that's top six. And then the level after that has to be top four for Champions League qualification. So there's, from our perspective as fans, that there's three levels that we want to see the club achieve. But there has to be other things that the Friedkins want to do as well with the club, not just the team. So what do they want to do with the club to make us much more prominent, should we say? The club is prominent for us as Blues, but we pale into insignificance when it comes to those dreaded people, the national media, who fawn over four or five other clubs, like, well, I won't say what I was going to say, but, and I'm not saying I want them to fawn over us. I just want, it'd just be nice for Everton to get a little bit more respect in the media. For instance, you know, when it's, you know, when we go to Chelsea and Chelsea can move into the top three or top two and go second if they beat Everton today. There was no mention on the TV commentary that had Everton won at Chelsea, we would have gone fifth. None of that. There's no balance in the media. The media is completely tilted towards three or four. Hang on. No, let me finish, bro. Towards three or four clubs. And I think that has to be something that the Friedkins need to try and address somehow in the way that they run and portray the club themselves.
Right. And what would your take on the first year of the Friedkins people?
I think you have to break it down into a number of different areas. And if you know, if you look back 12 months, what was the first thing? First thing was to sort out the club's finances. And I think they've been very good on that. You know, let's not forget that they paid off £200 million rights and media funding, 158 million rights to MSP, sports capital, over £200 million to 777 partners. And obviously, Mashiri's £450 million loan was converted into equity. I think it's been a spectacular success. I'm really sorry. Are you going to hate me for this? I need to go. I'm being called.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Something.